School refusal is a different kettle of fish than a child simply wanting to stay at home for a day. It's a situation where children become so anxious or fearful, and it can be for a variety of reasons, that they refuse to go, repeatedly. While it's difficult to measure how many kids experience this, Dr. Rosina McAlpine, founder of the Win-Win Parenting Program in Australia, says it could be up to 5%. She's founded the Parenting Wellness Workshop, which has been run across Australia and New Zealand, when through her work she realised many working parents were lacking support on how to balance their home life. Dr. Rosina McAlpine's completed a Masters of Higher Education and an education-focused PhD. She's with us from Sydney to talk about school refusal. Welcome. Thanks very much for your time, Rosina.
Oh, thanks, Catherine. Lovely to be here.
This has really taken off since the pandemic, hasn't it?
It has. And what we know is that there was school refusal prior to the pandemic. However, closing our children in for months at a time, taking them out of their normal school routine, hasn't really come back to pre-pandemic. And we've got the situation where school refusal is now greater than pre-pandemic times.
Can we talk a little bit more about what it is, and perhaps a follow-on for that might be the different ages, because I'm aware of quite young primary school children who've had months out of school with us, and I've had endless emails from parents of older teens, you know, perhaps 14, 15, who are just refusing to go. But can we start with the definition, Rosina?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we need to do is, if we start with truancy, you know, if we start with where children wave goodbye to their parents and say, see you, and then go off to the mall or, you know, have the day off, it is not that. So it's not that hidden where kids are pretending to go to school. School refusal, parents are very aware of it. It's where the children wake up in the morning and they go, please, Mum, don't make me go to school. Please, Dad, I don't want to go. There's absolute fear and anxiety about going to school or staying in school for the full day. And it's not that one-off where kids go, I'm tired, please let me just have the day off, which we all know what that's like, right? When we want to go to work and we go, oh, I wish I had the day off. This is repeated, where children are so stressed and so upset that they just don't want to go to school.
What's happening? Is it anxiety and some kind of avoidance that is driven by a fairly extreme mode of anxiety?
It could be anxiety. If I can go through some of the main reasons, when we uncover what are the reasons for children or adolescents to refuse school, there's either experiencing one or a combination of things. So obviously anxiety and mental health issues are very common. And we know that, you know, closing the children in and making them fearful of being with other people or getting sick and things like that. So there could be this anxiety and mental health issues where they don't want to go to school. The other things that can happen are like the social issues. Some kids are just not, you know, a bit awkward when it comes to social relationships. So they might feel isolated, and that might even lead to more difficult situations like bullying. So, you know, there could be conflict with teachers, conflict with students, you know, their peers. So anxiety, social issues. Then there's, of course, the academic challenges. Now, learning doesn't come easily to everybody, right? So sometimes children who have learning challenges or behavioral challenges, and then they end up failing class exams or don't complete assignments. They feel overwhelmed or not doing well at school, and that might lead to school avoidance. And the final category, you know, main category, is family issues, because we know that sometimes there are traumatic events at home that have nothing to do with school. You know, there could be a serious illness in the family, there could be separation or divorce, could have moved to another area. And the final point that you made, which was that different stages or ages can have different situations, and that is life's transitions. Now, I think everybody knows what it's like to peel a toddler off your leg when you're taking them to preschool, right? Or that transition to kindergarten. Or, I was just speaking with a colleague of mine who's just transitioned twins to high school. And it's all of these big transition periods that can also be, scary. I don't want to go into a new environment and cause school refusal. So I hope that's given a kind of big overview picture of the different areas that parents need to delve into to find what's going on with the child.
The question is what you do about it. And let's start with the younger children, who, as I said, I'm familiar with kids around 8, 9, 10, whose behaviour was concerning to the extent that the parents and the school seem to accommodate this, right? Let's take that example. Again, it's not just a child being naughty. It's not just
Oh.
a reluctance that needs to be worked through. It's something more serious. What can you do?
So the first thing is to recognize exactly what you said, that this isn't just a child, misbehaving or wanting a day off. There are underlying challenges. So I always recommend that parents prioritize their well-being and their child's well-being first. Let's, forget school for a minute, although it is important to think about school because missing school has a lot of implications, and we can talk about that. But most importantly, we need to help parents, manage their stress, because when they're calm, they will be able to make good decisions for their children. If they're stressed and worried and upset, that just, is mirrored in their child. So I know it is stressful and I know it's hard to stay calm, but the first thing is prioritize your sleep, your well-being, exercise, talk to your friends, empathize with your child. Say, look, I get it, sweetie, but don't worry, we're together. We're going to do this together. So starting with, helping the parent, the child, and then trying to realize that obviously that's going to have an impact on the whole family. If the parents can't do it on their own, this is where you need to get extra help. And that's where, a step-by-step guide can really support parents, not just to feel like the burden's in my lap, that I've got to do all of this. What can they do to get extra support?
What are some of the things you can do if you're not quite at that level to deal with the reluctance? Might it mean you being a bit more hands-on with them getting to and from school, for example? And presumably one would be working with the teachers and the school and trying to come up with a regime that works.
That's true. And I think what we need to do is get to the heart of the matter, because that's what the school refusal is about. So remember, I mentioned that we've got all these different things that, in combination or individually could be causing it. So sitting down with the child with no pressure, but just gentle, open communication. Even if you start by yourself saying, when I was at school, there were these situations. And you might say, yeah, there were people who were bullied. There were, times when I felt overwhelmed by all the work. So offering like a menu of things that could be going wrong if the child is not ready to open up. So you're not telling them what's happening. You're saying, look, all of these different things could be happening. So this gives the child space to share their concerns, their fears, their reasons for not wanting to go to school. Now, I had a personal example where my son said to me, and this was when he was quite young, he said to me, "Mum, could you homeschool me?" And I was like, "Okay." So there's something going on here, right? So I said, "Oh, that's an interesting question. You've never asked that. Can you tell me a bit more about that?" And what happened was, when we started to have the conversation, he was being bullied at school. So it's through those conversations and, gentle coaxing, acknowledging, "Yep, I know that you're feeling, scared or you're feeling concerned, but together we can do it." So once you find the problem, like, is it bullying? Is it my academic? Is it that I've got anxiety and I just can't step out of the house? Then you've got at least a direction to go in. So finding what's going on is probably step number one.
Step number two might be, especially if we're talking a more extreme case, you might work with the school to what? Let's get you to school, and if there's particular concerns, you know, the school will get in touch with me or whatever. Is that kind of step-by-step process viable when you've had a really significant refusal?
So this is where it's important to bring in professionals when you feel like I haven't been able to gently coax. Now, I was able to, and we had strategies for the particular bullying approach that was happening. So we had strategies, and our son would go to school and he'd try those strategies, because one of the things he said to me was, "Mum, don't get involved. I don't want you to tell anyone. I don't want you to do anything. I want to do this by myself." So this is where parents have to decide, you know, which way to go. He wasn't physically being bullied. He was verbally being bullied. So I was like, okay, well, if you feel like you can manage it, let's do it together. So if parents have got strategies and they can get their kids to school and practice and do all these things, and we eventually got through that all by himself. He didn't need me to go to school at all. We just, you know, trial and error, and we got there in the end. But if that's not working, if you've done everything you can, first things first, reach out to the school. Oftentimes in a school, you've got a well-being or a school counsellor, somebody who can support you and talk to the teacher, your child's teacher. It really takes like a group approach where parents are aware, the teachers are aware, the school counsellors are aware, and through that being able to problem solve. So in that case, you might be able to say to your child, "You only have to go to morning tea. Let's just give that a go." Or, "You only need to go to school and sit in the library. You don't even need to go to class. The librarian will be there. You'll be able to do your work in the library." So this is step by step getting them back onto the school grounds so that they can start to see, "Oh, actually, I'm not in any danger. This is okay. I have got support around me." So when you get the whole, parents and carers, teachers, school counsellors, all on the same page, and you may need a mental health professional if that's what's needed.
Okay.
So
let's look at that older age group, Rosina. This became a real issue post-pandemic. I've had so many letters. And this email here probably helps set us up with a really good example. This person says, "I have had a huge struggle with my son not going to school to the point that we ended up being referred to Takura, which is the correspondence school here, Rosina. And he's been doing that now for nearly 2 years. Interesting timing. That takes us back to 2022. This kid is bright, sporty, top year 8 boy in athletic sport with no training. That makes him about 13. A great group of friends who somewhat surprisingly still support him and try to get him out and about, so nothing social. I think the tipping point was an incident in school that he would never tell me about, but it was a teacher, where the school and I agreed, hindsight is a fine thing, that he didn't have to go to that class. Then throw in the COVID pandemic, he realised he really didn't have to go to school, and we all had a horrible time for about 6 months. A therapist advised us to make him go to school. That caused a lot of trauma for the whole family. All he said was, just let me do school from home. The idea of therapists is well and good, but if you have a 13-year-old boy who just won't talk, we came out of one $250 session where he said, why do they keep pausing and being quiet? Do they think that I will talk? Because I won't. Now, that is a good example of the communication we've heard from many parents post-pandemic. And sometimes, to your point, it was a series of things that got the kids to the point where they did not want to go. Where would you start with this?
So as you can see, the therapist's suggestion, and I really loved what the parents said there, the therapist made a suggestion, they did try it and it didn't work. And this is why it's the whole family approach. One of the things that I'd like to ask the question about with this parent is, was the child included in the decisions that were made? And oftentimes giving children a smorgasbord approach, like what about if you just go to morning tea, or what about if you just go to the library, or what about if you, so that they're at least having some, you know, say in what's happening to them, being told what to do or being forced to do it. Nobody likes that. No one wants that. So it is about that, you know, together making those decisions. Now, if a child absolutely adamantly refuses, as we've got the situation here, but is thriving online, then that's clearly the strategy. The child's happy, the parents are happy, the child is still learning. Now, of course, little by little, we need to consider that academics are not the only part of a whole person. So in this case, we would be amazingly that the friends are still there, working together to make sure that the social well-being there, the emotional well-being is there, because we need to look at the whole child, not just the academics. So hopefully, as this child becomes more confident in their learnings, has their friends around them, has support to manage their emotions or manage their anxiety, to heal that trauma. Clearly, there's still trauma there from school, whatever that was. Somehow, little by little, heal that trauma with various modalities, with various, professionals. I think that we sometimes we don't know the full destination, but we just take the next step on the journey. And it sounds like they've done that.
And an interesting follow-up from the same communication. What concerns me are social interaction. This worries me. The discipline of getting up and interacting at schools, or indeed any other organisation going forward, right? I added the last bit. Leaving the house, the room, is a big thing. A great kid, so helpful and fun at home, just blanks me when we talk about going back to school. Year 10 now. Very difficult. My other two boys weren't much better. I'm glad they've both left school now. It's very stressful. It's a complicated thing. And interesting you make the point that the Te Kura, the correspondence school, might work, especially if you've got social interaction happening. I've had other parents, it really is about motivation of getting up and doing anything sometimes. And there still seems to be an issue of leaving the house or the room. And this is where, while it might be a combo of things, that pandemic just seemed to really put the cat among the pigeons. So, to your point, you're on a journey. You've got to try things, and you've got to try and put together the pieces of what might be a quite complex puzzle with these older kids, right?
That's exactly right. And so we just take things a one step further. So let's say this parent who says, my child won't leave their room. So all we really want them to do is move into the kitchen or the lounge room, right? We just want to get them out of that room. And then what if their friends that they do have that are still, communicating with them came over and spent time in that room? And then what about if those friends just went into the backyard with this child? So it's like those incremental steps, because every incremental step, like nothing happened to me when I left my room. It's okay. I ate dinner, I watched TV, I did some stuff, I played games, and then I went outside. And again, nothing happened to me. I was okay. My friends were there, I was there. We picnicked on the grass, we kicked a ball around, and that's what we really need to see, that confidence building, taking those micro steps, because that builds confidence. And then it's like, well, you were outside. What about now we went the backyard? What about the front yard? And what about if we walk just two houses down? See how everything's still okay. So it's that building that confidence. But clearly, you can see that when it's this serious, there's trauma that needs to be
An
healed.
interesting observation here. Someone said someone should send this interview to the Prime Minister. It's not as easy as fining parents. In fact, that's ridiculous. Our child's school actually wasn't invested in the kids not being there at all. Modern learning's made it even more complicated, which is to do with our learning environments where we've gone back to big open spaces in many schools. Rosina, and there's a lot of debate about whether that works for kids on the spectrum, for example, or kids who are struggling when there's a lot of noise and not a lot of calm. So it's a complex issue. I think the other thing from our correspondent was that they seem to keep up a really good connection with their young person, and to that's your point. There aren't going to be simple answers to this. It may involve professionals. It may be successful or not successful with professionals, but they've clearly kept up that connection at home, and that would seem to be a really important part of the whole story. Thank you,
Absolutely.
Dr. Rosa McAlpine, who is with an organisation called Win Win Parenting, a program in Australia.